Well, hi, I'm Catherine. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Feels actually a little odd to be standing. A lot of the meetings that we go to in Stafford, even if you're the speaker, you're sitting down, and I do one at the jail, too, so we also sit there, too, so it's a little weird to be on my feet for a change. But I guess just to get it started, you know, I've been sober now since February 24th of 2007. I have a sponsor who's here tonight with me. I have a home group as well. It's the Tuesday Night Beginners Group in North Stafford. We meet at on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. So if you're ever out that way around that time, you're more than welcome to come by. And I guess just to start off, you know, I started drinking when I was about 15 years old, you know, summertime, a couple of beers with some friends of mine, you know, pretty innocent stuff. You know, I didn't have like a heavy drinking family, at least in my immediate family, although, you know, over the years, you know, I've decided that that probably wouldn't have had much bearing on whether or not I was an alcoholic anyway. You know, I think that's something that's just, you know, it either is in us or it isn't. But you know, for me, I had a lot of fun in the beginning. You know, I just really took to it. I figured, you know, if one beer does this, four must be better. I instantly went from drinking beer to, you know, 151, because I'm like, well, if beer does this, hard liquor must be even better. You know, the logical thinking of an alcoholic, you know, that if, you know, a small amount does this, we should really go all the way. And, you know, and that was sort of the case with most stuff in my life, although for many years it centered primarily around drinking, and I got into quite a bit of trouble. Not right away. You know, being 15, it was not possible to be a daily drinker for the most part, so I didn't do that right away, but I instantly started changing my friends. You know, if you didn't drink, you know, if we were like, you know, school-age friends, you know, from middle school, you know, all of a sudden I'm drinking and they're not, we're not really friends anymore, to, you know, just pretty much just cutting people out of my life, you know, when they would start to question what I did. I'm like, yeah, no. and that would be the last conversation we would have, you know, and I couldn't see at the time, you know, that I was doing those things. I was just, you know, doing what I thought was logical. You know, I'm going where the fun is, which is over here, and I'm sorry that they don't want to be a part of it, but, you know, that sucks for them. And very self-centered. You know, I'll put that out there, too. You know, also was not aware of that, you know, how completely self-absorbed I was, you know, in everything that I did. And, you know, and I just kept on, you know, to the point where even by junior year of high school, I was I had so situated myself that I could drink daily if I wanted to. You know, I had made the right friends, you know, slept with the right people, whatever it took to get that opportunity on a daily basis. And I was in rough shape. You know, I was having like shakes and stuff, although at the time I didn't really know what that was. I just thought I had bad nerves. And, you know, and maybe the seeing stuff, you know, that happened maybe a handful of times, you know, that's just because I'm going crazy. You know, it's not the drinking, I'm just nuts. You know, and I was much more willing to accept the I'm crazy label than the I'm a drunk label, you know, because the crazy is like, you know, that's not really my fault, but the drinking, you know, you actually have to do something about that. You know, and I wasn't willing to accept it. And then I kind of, you know, after a couple of bad experiences, like I wrecked a car during a blackout, had no idea, you know, so I kind of laid off the drinking, did some other stuff that did about the same kind of job, you know, on my, you know, emotional and mental state. You know, I wouldn't call it alcohol, but it was just as much fun. And, you know, under the impression that it was going to be different, you know, because maybe because I don't blackout, you know, on this stuff over here, I can control it better. Well, that didn't work out very well because I got into, you know, that had its own set of troubles that went right along with it. So, you know, after struggling with some of the other stuff, when I would have periods of sobriety on that stuff, my reward was to come back and start drinking, you know, because I'm like, see, I've done so well, I didn't do all this other stuff over here, I deserve a drink. Never mind, the only reason I went to that stuff in the first place was because I couldn't control my drinking. But this all made perfect sense to me. And, you know, so I did that. I was just bouncing around, you know, doing whatever I could to not feel the way that I felt. Because really, that's what it came down to, is I couldn't deal with me. I didn't like who I was. I was not comfortable around people because I either thought that you wouldn't like me if you knew me, or you already didn't like me. I was always worried about what you thought about me. I was always worried about whether or not I was good enough or smart enough or pretty enough or, you know, whatever the case was. I was never enough. But what I loved about alcohol is that it was the enough. You know, when I drank, all of that went away, and I was just me, and I was happy, so I thought. But what I didn't really sign on for was the consequences that came along with it, you know, and how quickly a life, you know, that seemingly wasn't so bad, you know, at first. You know, I had a pretty good upbringing. My dad was a minister. My mom, you know, was a teacher at school. And, you know, like, there were, you know, we had rough times sometimes financially, but we weren't, like, poor by any stretch of the imagination. You know, and yet I was dissatisfied, you know. Yet I was, you know, ungrateful for what I had and, you know, and all these things that, you know, I really twisted it around. The more into my drinking I went, the more I started to view my life in a negative light. The more I couldn't stand how things were. And what it really was is I couldn't stand me. I was becoming that much more disgusted with me. And so naturally, everything else around me followed suit. You know, if I don't like who I am, I can't stand you either. And, you know, things started to happen, you know, after about 7 years, I guess, of drinking, you know, that I really didn't sign on for at all. You know, it was to the point where it had stopped being fun a long time ago. And, you know, and it was pretty much just doing what I had to do to get by so that I wouldn't kill myself because I was so miserable. And, you know, for me, that, you know, that took a lot of shapes and forms. It from, you know, I wanted to go to school when I got out of high school. I tried and failed several times, you know, getting into even community college. Like, I would sign up, I would go to orientation, and when it came time to, like, sign up for classes, I might even do that. But then came first day of school, and it was like, withdraw, 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 because I just couldn't show up for life. You know, my jobs were the same. You know, if I had not been threatened to be fired because there had been suspicion of me drinking on the job, which had happened several times, it was that being sober for the amount of time it took to be at work was so unbearable that I just quit because I couldn't stand it. If I can't be drunk, at least before I come in or shortly, you know, thereafter, sometime on my 10-minute break, you know, there's no way I'm going to make it through an 8-hour shift on a Friday night. Like, you're crazy. You know, and so that kind of stuff was happening. And then, you know, of course, the blackouts, and the, you know, you wake up and, you know, I start drinking in Danville, which is where I was living at the time, wake up in Martinsville, and, you know, and things like that, you know, taking little vacations without even realizing it. And, you know, that stuff, like, you know, I would shrug it off because I'm like, oh, I'm sure that happens to everybody, you know, and I would kind of laugh it off, like, yeah, it is kind of funny sometimes. But then you get those, you know, some situations where you're like, yeah, that wasn't so funny. You know, I really feel bad about what just happened here. You know, but it's like, what are you going to do? You know, I didn't know how to deal with that either. You know, I didn't know how to deal with the good life that I had coming up with. I didn't know how to feel, you know, feel good about myself, you know, without drinking. You know, now I really have good reason to feel bad about myself because I just did this stuff over here. So now I really have to drink because I don't know how to deal with the guilt and the shame that comes along with doing things that question the morals that I was brought up with. And so I just kept drinking, which was always the answer, really, regardless what the situation was. And, you know, and again, you know, things were just getting worse and worse and worse. First it was, you know, just the friends and the school and the job, and then it was like the, okay, somewhere in the mix of this madness that is my life, you know, I get pregnant, you know, and I have a daughter. So there was like holding on with everything in me, a 9-month period of like not drinking, which was probably the most unbearable part of the whole drinking experience, because I had no program. I had no alternative. You know, if I wasn't drinking, you know, I didn't have anything else. So I was very unhappy, to put it, you know, put it lightly. And, you know, but day I got home from the hospital, you know, I beer in hand, like, you know, just like it never stopped. And, you know, and then, you know, things would get bad. You know, I was trying to be a mother and, you know, take care of my daughter and do the things that I was supposed to be doing, you know, but I was miserable, and I could not stay sober. I couldn't. I wanted it with everything in me to not be that mom that, like, can't take care of her kid because she's too wasted. But that was me. You know, everything that I ever wanted, every dream that I ever had, at that point, I would watch, you know, I would build it up and watch it come crashing down as I struggled again and again to stay sober and not be able to. And so it was after I had her, you know, I went through detox in October of 2005 or September. And I was back in the same detox a month later, you know, and then I was in a rehab 6 months later, you know, because I was just trying, you know, I was like, there's got to be something, you know. I went to see a psychiatrist and did 6 months of counseling on two different occasions during that time period, and it was nice to have somebody to talk to once a week, but, you know, I never really got anything out of it. I was like, you know, I mean, I think it's great that we get to talk about this stuff, but you're not giving me an answer for what I need to do. And, you know, I tried church, you know, because that's where I was raised, so, you know, I tried that for a bit, and, you know, and I always just felt like the odd man out. Like, everybody else is in on the joke. You know, everybody else is getting it, and I'm not. Like, I watch these people have spiritual experiences in church, and I'm not able to, you know, and I don't get that, because I pray just like they do. And that was frustrating, you know, to be that hopeless, you know, in the midst of people that, you know, you can tell they have that thing that's missing in me, that's filled in them. It was a very dark time for me. You know, I sometimes didn't think that, you know, the alcoholic death was all that dismal looking. You know, it actually sounded kind of nice compared to what I felt when I was sober. You know, I was like, maybe if I'm lucky, I'll die drunk. You know, and I won't feel it. But, you know, but it was like I said, it was an endless cycle. And rehab was actually where I finally, shipped us off on a little bus, you know, to go to meetings when we were there for like day treatment and stuff like that. And so that was my first exposure, although at that time I was still, you know, like, I don't know, am I an addict because I did some of this stuff, but really I like to drink, so am I an alcoholic, like, I don't know. And really what it was is I kind of knew I was an alcoholic, so I was trying to be an addict so I wouldn't have to deal with the drinking. I was like, I could give up this stuff just fine, you know, and it made logical sense to me. Like, it's illegal. I shouldn't want to do this stuff. I just won't tell them that I'm drinking on the weekends, you know. But it didn't work, you know, because what ended up happening is, you know, I went into a halfway house out of my rehab, and you know, I think at about 60 days, I showed up in a meeting and I picked up my chip and I said, you know, I'm doing great here. Thank you very much. You know, and the sponsor that I had at the time, who was really just the poor woman that I called a sponsor, but didn't actually work very much of the steps with, did not at all take her suggestions. In fact, it was one of her suggestions, the one about the relationship thing, that was kind of our last conversation of any substance. and needless to say, you know, unsponsored, you know, without any other solution, just me and my head against the world. We were drunk at 87 days, you know, so, you know, and there it was again. It was like, you know, how did this happen? But, you know, my answer to fixing my life only leads to the same place, regardless of how well-intentioned I am. And, you know, in my mind, it made perfect sense. I'm gonna get this part-time job, and then I'm gonna get this full-time job, and I never quit the part-time job, even though that would have made sense, because full-time is full-time, you know, and I was working, you know, because that's how I was gonna fix my life. I was gonna work my way into sobriety. You know, if I'd had a sponsor, she would have told me, you know, that maybe you need to make some time for meetings. You know, since you have all this time to work, you could go to a couple of meetings. So, you know, but there was nobody there to tell me that. And I wouldn't have felt at the time that I needed it because I wasn't convinced yet. In as much as I had all the evidence around me to the contrary, I was not convinced that it was that bad yet. And I was drunk. You know, I got drunk. And so that was the beginning of the end of my drinking, was after that brief stint, you know, trying, you know, kind of being a visitor around AA, because I wouldn't say I was a part of it yet. You know, it had not occurred to me that you guys do this as a lifelong thing. Like this is a lifestyle change. These steps are not just, you know, things that we like to do from time to time, like, you know, or even something that we do one time and then graduate from. Like, these are principles that we live by, you know, that I had no mental capacity for that at the time. I was just like, and no, I'm not going to, those are the other 12 things I'm not going to do. So I treated it that way. So, but the one thing it did do was, for some reason in the back of my mind when I was out there the last 4 months that I was, you know, I kept thinking, if I could just get back to those people. You know, and I was terrified of them because I was like, if I ever see them out here, because I was literally, like, at that point running the streets of Baltimore, like, you know, just living day to day, pretty much. And, but I knew where the meetings were, and I knew where my halfway house was, and I knew where I could find that old sponsor if I really wanted to, but I couldn't level my pride enough to go back and say, I need your help. And fortunately, Baltimore County's finest did that for me, you know, because I ended up, you know, see, when you drink to the extent that we often do, and I certainly did, you get to the point where you can't legally make enough money to support your habits, so you move on to other things that you might not necessarily have done otherwise, but in this circumstance, it, you know, you just have to. So I did. You know, I stole some things and, you know, did a lot of crappy stuff, for lack of a better word. And it caught up to me very quickly. And so I got arrested 3 times in that 4-month time frame. And on the third time, you know, I had gotten so much trouble with the first, you know, 2 and, you know, some of the other stuff that I just kept ripping and running and doing whatever I wanted to do. And, you know, oh, you have this court date. I'm like, yeah, okay, but I wouldn't go. And, you know, I get bonded out here. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Mom. You know, and take her car, you know, and disappear for 4 days, and, you know, just, like, still doing my thing, until finally, you know, they were like, actually, no, you're going to sit down, and you are going to answer for all of this stuff that you've been doing, and so that was sort of like the when the gates of hell closed on me with a clang kind of moment, when I knew that there was no more running, that, you know, I was going to answer for this, and it might not be pretty, and it certainly was not going to be fun, but it was going to happen whether I wanted it to or not. And for some reason, at that point, in as much as I thought it would be a terrifying thing, I felt very light and freed as I was being hauled away in handcuffs, you know, because, you know, which is almost like a paradox, you know, to be knowing that I'm on my way to getting locked up and to feel free, because I knew that I would not be able to drink. And that at that point I had been trying so desperately not to, but yet not having any other options, continuing to do the same thing day after day anyway, just because I didn't know what else to do. And I'm like, well, I'm sure they've got something else to do, because they're not going to let me do that. So, and that's where sort of my sobriety begins. You know, at least at that point, the physical aspects of sobriety. You know, it was shortly within the first 2 weeks of being in a facility that I noticed a girl carrying a big book through the dorm. And, you know, I mean, I wasn't an idiot. I knew what the big book looked like. I hadn't read much of mine, but I knew what it was. And so I asked her, I was like, where'd you get that? You know, and she's like, oh, they have these meetings, you know, these people, they come in here and they, you know, and they're like, she was like, if you want one, you can go. You gotta get your own book. This one's mine. So, you know, I filled out the little paperwork and, you know, got to go to the meetings. And, and it was funny because, you know, I know now that, like, what they were saying, like, the words and the message, like, had not changed, you know, from being in there, you know, as opposed to the meetings that I went to before. But it was like, I was just broken enough that I could actually listen to what they were saying as opposed to just hearing the words, you know. And I started to relate to what they said, you know, even though obviously they weren't where I was, you know, because they got to go home and I didn't. I related to their drinking and the misery of it and how hopeless they were, and, you know, and how each one of them had at some point, you know, maybe the circumstances were a little bit different, but at some point they had hit a brick wall where, you know, they just couldn't go on the way they were, you know, something had changed, and now they were doing this AA thing, and, you know, with the steps, and their life was great, and they were all smiley, and, you know, and that spoke to me. You know, so I did my time, because, you know, you don't get in that much trouble without doing a little bit. And about 17 and a half months later, I got out, and the woman in the final facility that I was dealing with, because I, you know, traveled around a little bit during my drinking, so I got in trouble a couple of places and had to answer to a couple of different jurisdictions. The last facility was where I met my first sponsor, who was also bringing the meetings in, and, you know, made plans, you know, because I was like, the meeting was on a Thursday, my court date was on a Friday, I was probably getting out, or so said my lawyer, but you never really know. So it's like, well, just in case, you know, this is where I'll be, you know, this is the number, you know, call me, and, you know, we'll go to a meeting. And I did get out, and she did call me, and we did go to a meeting. And that's where, like, I feel like the rubber met the road, like, the real deal sobriety started. You know, even though, like I said, I'd been physically sober for a year and a half, there were definitely times, you know, mentally, if you read the journals that I had kept when I was in jail, you might question how long I'd really been sober, because I was still mentally very sick. You know, just very, very raw emotionally, and very childlike, you know. Very unable to deal with life as life was, you know, even after all of that, still having this sense of entitlement, you know, and how dare you tell me what to do, you know, as if I know so well for myself. But we barreled on through, and it was like, you know, no sooner did I get out and we started, you know, the relationship together that she had me start writing my fourth step, and I was like, well, gosh, we just met, like, you know, you want me to start writing this already, you know, because that's like the big, like, I feel like everybody dreads, like, oh my gosh, I have to tell you my whole life story, like, I have to tell you everything I've ever been angry about, everything I'm afraid of, like, that's really personal, like, you know, to ask right away. But, you know, it took, like, I think it took me, like, maybe 2 months and, like, 3 days, you know, because the 2 months of procrastinating and then the 3 days of actually writing, you know. You know, and I got it all out on paper, and, you know, and it's funny because I still had, you know, that same fourth step when I changed sponsors, and, of course, I had to redo the fourth step because, you know, your credits don't transfer. you know, it was funny to see how even then, even though it was, like, a legitimate fourth step and it was as much as I could see about myself at the time, I was still very much the victim. I'm like, see, look at my life. If you had this life, you'd drink too. Like, you know, just that whole, like, you know, looking for any excuse, you know, other than I'm an alcoholic and this is what I need to do about my, you know, about my situation. It's like, oh, but it's got to be this person's fault. Like, don't you remember when this happened? Like, you know, and, you know, so sometimes I just have to laugh at myself because I'll still do it. Like, oh, it's totally their fault. Like, I am totally justified this time. You know, but if you ever read that part, I think it's in the 12 and 12 view. We don't get to do that. We don't get to have justified anger. I certainly don't anyway. So, you know, I had this big old long list of stuff that I read off to her, and, you know, much to my dismay, she had done, like, most of it anyway, so I didn't get to be special. I didn't have anything that was uniquely mine. You know, I didn't have any, like, cut cards that, you know, meant that I got to be the alcoholic that doesn't have to do everything that we do because I'm different. You know, I was just like everybody else. You know, maybe my circumstances, you could rearrange the pictures a little bit, but in reality, it was all the same. And, you know, so there came, you know, some of my biggest defects, which were, you know, the pride, you know, the uniqueness, the, you know, I might not feel like I'm enough, but damn it, I'm special. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just the, and really, you know, the I want it my way all the time, you know, and I will do whatever it takes to make that so. And so therein lies, you know, some of the difficulties with my amends, you know, because I was still the same person. You know, I had not had opportunity, you know, being in jail, you know, what a great place to rehabilitate, you know, with a bunch of other people like you, you know, with just as much of an answer as you have because you're all sitting around the same table. You know, there was not much opportunity to change that sort of thing. And so, you know, like I said, again, you know, I had the physical sobriety. I did not have the emotional sobriety. And, you know, and that showed when I tried to call my daughter's father. You know, mind you, I had, in my drinking, lost custody of her about 6 months before I got arrested that third time. And, I mean, I tried to call him because in that whole time frame, I had not seen her. I had not spoken to her. I had written to her but not received any sort of response directly from her, and from her father maybe like once or twice over the course of a year and a half, and that was not my fault. That was their fault. You know, if he wasn't being such a jerk, you know, if he would just understand my situation, you know, he would see. And I still couldn't see that I stepped on his toes big time. You know, I just, you know, what had ended that relationship was another bout of me drinking. Like, I had promised to be the designated driver at this party, and I was not at all in any condition to drive or even walk at that point. And he had asked me to leave, and I thought that sounded like a really good idea at the time. And I just left, and I never came back. And then I wondered why he wouldn't let me see her again, you know, when I had been the one to leave. And, you know, and that was a bitter pill to swallow. I did not want to see that I had been the cause of that situation. You know, I wanted to blame it on him. And until I could own up to my part, like, for real, and not, you know, without any aspects of blaming, you know, in it, I was not able to make any changes in that situation, which is, you know, that is amends. You know, you have to change in order for those things to happen. You know, it's not like, I'm here, I'm sorry, okay, give me what I want. Like, you know, that's not how it works, but that's how I was doing it, you know. And so that phone call ended badly, and he hung up on me. And then he didn't talk to me for like a year, and I had to be okay with that. You know, and what I did do was, somewhere in the mix of, you know, all the madness, you know, I remembered that according to the state of Maryland, I owed him child support that I had not been paying since before I even got locked up, you know, and so I had to start doing that. I started paying, you know, because amends are both, you know, financial and emotional. You know, there's all sorts of different harms that we cause people. But my sponsor said, why don't you start with that one? You know, that's at least a little bit of an icebreaker. You know, and so I did. And, you know, and for, I think it was 7 months straight, I sent a check. You know, the first one had a little note with it that said, okay, this is the deal. Like, I know I'm way, way, way behind, like, probably, like, 2 years by this point. But here's the first, you know, installment of, you know, just the bare minimum, like, what I owed him every month. You know, and here it is, and when I can afford to pay more, you know, towards what I'm behind, you know, I'll send that too, but, you know, for now, here's this, you know, and he obviously accepted it because it cleared in my bank account. But, you know, I didn't receive any response. And I did that, you know, but, and I was still expecting change. You know, because now I'm invested. I'm sending my money. Like, he's got to answer the phone now. He still didn't answer the phone. And so I did this for 7 months, and I would call, you know, on a practically, like, at least a weekly basis, you know, trying to, you know, establish that relationship again with my daughter. And every time I would get the little message, the little voicemail thing, you know, and I would leave a little message and they would never call back. And I would send the check the next month and I would make my calls and they would never call back. And I was getting very angry, needless to say. You know, and as much as I knew that he had a right to be angry and that I knew a lot of this was my fault, it was still very frustrating to be doing what I was supposed to be doing and nothing was changing. And not getting any results, basically, you know, because that's all I was hearing from, you know, the people around me, like, oh, you just keep taking the right actions, and, you know, and you get this life beyond your wildest dreams, and I'm like, you have no idea, I am miserable right now, you know, but I would keep barreling along, because people would assure me, they would be like, you just got to keep going, because it will get better, and I'm like, okay, you know, but the reality was, I was crying myself to sleep most nights, and, you know, and I would smile, and I would get into service, you know, because I had to do something to fill that void, you know, that I was, you know, that I was experiencing, you know, not only, you know, from the, obviously not, you know, drinking, you know, but trying to be, you know, get on the spiritual path. But, you know, without those people in my life, you know, which really I feel like, personally, are what makes life worth living, you know, what good is having everything you want if you've got no one to share it with, you know, that was very frustrating. And, but I ran across somebody who I don't even think is sober now, and this was after changing sponsors, you know, who was like, well, why don't you just, like, pull the legal card real quick and, you know, see what happens. So I was like, well, you know, I have been, I left this one message, I was like, I have been paying, and, you know, and I really just want to see her, and I kind of have a right to, because I am her mother. And, and I got a call back within about an hour. And, you know, and it was difficult, you know, and I still had to deal with, like, the old fear about, you know, the person that he knew that I was, whether or not, you know, I had changed, which I had, and, you know, I could tell you that all day long, but until you see it for yourself, would you believe it? I wouldn't have if it was, you know, if the shoe was on the other foot. And, you know, and he was like, well, I don't know, you might just be interested because it's the holidays and you feel guilty, because it was like November. And he was like, well, why don't we wait till after the new year? So it was like right after, like, I think it was like January 2nd, I don't know, something roughly around that. You know, I called him again. I was like, hey, I'm still interested. Like, can we get together? And so for the first time in, by that point, it had been almost 3 years without seeing my daughter. We got to meet at the National Air and Space. Sorry. We got to meet at the National Air and Space Museum in D.C. I still have pictures. And, you know, and that was the beginning of what is still a work in progress. You know, the idea that I had that, you know, these steps were a check the box kind of deal, that I could just go and make my amends and move on with my life. You know, that one situation, if no other, has completely changed my perspective of the ninth step. You know, because it is so much more than me just showing up, you know, that one time and saying, I'm sorry. You know, it's being there every single week when it's time for my visit. And, you know, and in those times in the beginning stages when she didn't know who I was, you know, explaining to her that, you know, I'm mom. You know, hi. I know you probably don't remember me at this point, but that's who I am. You know, and dealing with her hesitance and her distrust, and only knowing that I'm mom because dad said so, to answering questions about, mom, why'd you leave? The hard stuff. You know, the stuff that you don't always get to read about in the book. You gotta go find somebody in the room that's been through that and knows what it's like to answer those questions. And, you know, to the point where now she really looks forward to the visits. You know, she's well aware of who I am. And, you know, there are certain expectations that come along with that now, too, you know, which is fine, you know. And it's still, you know, of course, you know, I'd like to get custody again, but, you know, that's still something that, you know, I'm working on. And, you know, but to have the opportunity to be there at all is such a blessing because, you know, before I wanted that with all, everything in me and I could not show up for the life of me. I would pass by her exit to where they lived every single day on the way to where I was going to, you know, get drink and wasted and all the other stuff that I was doing. And I would think to myself every single day, I'm going to stop tomorrow and I'm going to go be, you know, the person that I need to be tomorrow. And tomorrow never came, just like the day that I was going to quit drinking never came, because I had no control over it. And, there's a lot of other amends, too, you know, things like, you know, like the work with my family is never done. You know, just when I think I've satisfied all the things that my mother wants me to do, I get another phone call. And as much as I can't stand it sometimes, like, I gotta go. You know, I just have to. Because that's not the, you know, the Catherine that she knew when I was drinking, I would turn the phone off when she called. So she knew that I had initially gotten the call, because it wouldn't go straight to voicemail right away, but then it would. So she knew that I was, like, avoiding her. And I had gone at one point during my drinking an entire year without speaking to or emailing my mother. You know, and being a mother now, I know what that's like. I know what it's like to go several years without hearing anything from your own child and how miserable that is. So it's almost like I got a taste of my own medicine there for a bit because of the way I had treated my own mother. And I don't know if I believe in karma, but I mean, I definitely think it opened my eyes to what I had really done. That kind of helps keep me in check now, thinking about that kind of stuff. But, you know, with the other steps, too, you know, I've definitely, you know, had my own path when it came to spirituality. You know, I grew up Baptist, Southern Baptist, I should say, because that's different, right? But I wasn't entirely sure that's what I wanted to do. And I won't go too far into, you know, my personal thing, because I do feel like, you know, just as it's personal to me, it's personal to everybody. And not everybody chooses to go, you know, a church route or, you know, anything like that. But I think the key point is that we have that. You know, there has to be, for me, something other than me that's not you, you know, that dictates my life, you know, something greater, you know, whether it's as basic as it was in the beginning as the group itself, you know, obviously this group of people who are drunks like I used to be, now they don't drink anymore and they all seem pretty happy about it. I can believe in whatever they're doing because it's obviously working, you know, to what it is today. You know, it can start that small. It could even start smaller. You know, it could just be my sponsor, which, you know, worked for a while until she, you know, did something I didn't like and I realized she was human too, you know. And, you know, I had to, you know, expand, you know, the horizon of what it meant to be a higher power. But I think the biggest, for me now, the one of my favorite things is 12-step work, you know, and I used to fuss, you know, a lot when I was newer, because like, I never get to sponsor anybody. Like, nobody ever asks me, you know, and maybe it was because I just didn't have anything worth, you know, asking for, you know, which at most times might have been the case. But, you know, I had to be reminded on several occasions that, you know, being of service to others takes a lot of forms other than sponsorship. You know, it could be those cookies that I, you know, incessantly made for the first year and a half of my sobriety outside of an institution, you know, because that seemed to be what I was good at, so people kept asking me to do it. It could be, you know, just something as small as, like, you know, helping set up chairs, you know, saying hi to people that look like they're new, and even if they're not new, be like, hey, I've never seen you before anyway, you know, like, let's talk, you know, and just being that smiling face, you know, at the meeting. But what I feel for me that has been most rewarding is getting to go into the jails, which, first of all, I didn't think I was going to be able to do because, you know, at the time I was living in Fairfax, and they were like, well, you need, like, 5 years sober, 8 years off paper, and I was, like, doing the math. I'm like, so I'm going to be, like, 13 years sober by the time I qualify to do that, you know, because I had been in my own trouble and probation and all that other stuff, too. So I was really bummed out that I wasn't going to get to do that, because I knew once I started, you know, getting a little along in the process of the steps that, you know, there was going to be some kind of work that I needed to do, and I felt very strongly about work in the jails, you know, especially because that's where they hooked me. So it would be nice to go back and try to carry that in and say, no, really, I've been where you've been. Like, literally, like, I wore that jumpsuit, too. Like, I know what that's like. And I get to do that now just because, you know, at the Rappahannock Jail, their guidelines are a little different, you know, so I do qualify to go in there. And, you know, and that's been really cool, you know, just to be able to walk into the jail. First of all, I don't have to go in handcuffs, which is kind of nice. I get to walk around the jail freely without an escort, which really tickles me to death because I could never do that before. We always had somebody there, you know, especially if we weren't, you know, cuffed and shackled. You know, you always had a correctional officer or a deputy sheriff walking with you everywhere you went. But, you know, going in there and talking with these women, and, you know, and sometimes, you know, it's an interesting bunch. Sometimes you get the ones that just don't want to sit in their cell another day, you know, so they come there because it's something to do. And then every now and again you get the ones that are like, you know, I've been to these, you know, meetings before outside of here, but for some reason this time it sounds different. And I'm like, that's me. You know, that's me sitting there, whatever, 4.5 years ago, thinking, you know, this time it sounds different, and getting to be that person that's coming back in there to try to help them, you know, is really the only way that I get to sort of pay back what has been given to me, you know, because I used to try to, like, you know, give people gas money for picking me up for a meeting and things like that, and they'd be like, no, just, you know, when you get that opportunity, you know, when you have a car, finally, and a valid license, like, you know, you can pass that along to them, too, you know, for the new people that need it, and so I'd be like, okay, you know, but that's the one that really, like, you know, I get the most out of, because like I said, I do remember what it's like. I do remember to be that hopeless and, you know, the feeling like, you know, I get a moment to breathe because I'm in here, but what really the question that I haven't answered yet is, what am I going to do when I get out? Like, am I going to go back to the same things and, you know, doing all the same stuff, or am I going to try something different? And if it's going to be different, what? What could be different, you know, because I couldn't come up with that on my own. You know, that was the trouble that I'd had for 22 years at that point, was I didn't know any other way. This is the way that I figured out, you know, seemingly, you know, on my own when I was 15 years old. This is my way to deal with life. And if you're taking away the only way that I have to cope, what am I going to do? You know, how am I going to live? How am I going to, you know, talk to people? How am I going to get up in front of people and talk? You know, that terrified me. I had a communication class in college, which I'm not done with. I'm still working on college, too. But, you know, I dropped that class the first time I tried college because I could not talk in front of people. It terrified me. I couldn't even talk if it was a group of more than 3 people. You know, now it's like, well, it's AA, and I have to do it, so you get used to it after a while. You know, because the things that you have to do to, you know, stay sober, like it says in the book, like, why would we, you know, do this stuff? Why would I take my inventory? And God knows, why would I admit that I'm wrong, you know, unless I had to do this stuff to survive? Because I do. You know, without it, it's easy to slip away, you know, and to get back into that, you know, I feel so alone. Nobody really understands me. You know, I'll just stay here by myself. I won't go to the meeting, you know, because they really don't like me anyway. You know, and next thing you know, I'm like, I'm this miserable ball of a person, you know, and all that's happened is that I've stopped doing what I need to do. You know, but as soon as I start back up again, you know, I jump back in, I go to my meetings, and I, you know, get back on track, and I do the things that I've been taught through these steps and through a sponsor and through the friends that I have in AA, and all of a sudden I'm fine again. You know, but for some reason, every time I forget, you know, that it's this stuff that makes me feel better, and it's my ideas that make me feel like crap, you know, and I'll still go through it now, you know. So by no means is this, like, you know, a perfection thing. In as much as I'm a perfectionist, I do not do this perfectly, you know, and but I've learned how not to beat myself up about it as much. But I think... I don't know, I feel like I don't want to go on too much longer because, you know, otherwise I'll just start, you know, telling you insignificant stuff that's interesting to me but not so much relevant to this. So anyways, that's pretty much my story, and thanks for having me down here. It's been a pleasure. We were actually just down here yesterday, so I got to kind of scope it out before I had to figure out where we were going. But it's nice. It's nice to be here doing something for something that saved my life, pretty much. So, thank you.